Elissa Walker Campbell to deliver sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big.
Okay, we want to welcome you back this weekend to the Big East Sports Show. It is another year of big expectations as we look forward to the start of the college football season. Certainly a lot of questions to be answered. And who can dethrone Alabama? There's a number of keys that play into that. Always great coaching. You know, you got your talent, the favorable schedule. And one conference in particular we're keeping a very close watch on is the Big 12. Several teams in there that I think are going to do very, very well. Delighted to welcome back one of the best experts in the business, that of course is Phil Steele with his publication Phil Steele the Magazine. And I cannot believe it, we were just talking about this is your 19th publication. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you, Alyssa. It's been a long time. You know, the first one came out, it was black and white newsprint. I covered 88 teams back then. Now it's up to 126 full color, 352 pages, probably about 150 pages more than we had back then. And each year we try to make it a little bit bigger, a little bit better.
Yeah, 8 additional pages, and as I understand now, the magazine's being offered, what, on iPad and for Android users. I mean, you've come a long ways, Phil.
Yeah, it's the first year for that, and that should take effect pretty shortly, and folks will be able to get it both ways. And a lot of folks in today's technology like to have it that way.
Okay, up first, let's tackle the Big 12 Conference. Let's talk about in the 2013 preseason Big 12 football poll. It's out. A bit of a surprise. It's got the Oklahoma State Cowboys at the top, Mike Gundy, and he certainly has done a remarkable job. But it seems like within this conference, there is a lot of parity and balance. But at the top was Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State came out number one in the media. I personally had them number two in the Big 12 this year. But when you look at them, they really do have a potent offense. You know, whether it's Clint Shelf or J.W. Walsh, and I think Shelf will win that job. They've got two quarterbacks that have gone to battle and done extremely well. The backfield, even though they lose Joseph Randall, I like Jeremy Smith, Desmond Rowland both look solid. The receiving core, one of the best in the country. The offensive line looks solid. In fact, I rate it the number 29 offensive line in the country. And then defensively, I know improvement was expected last year on the defense, and they did show some improvement. They cut it by about 35 yards per game. But this year I expect big improvement on the defense. In fact, I've got them going from 422 yards per game allowed all the way down to 360. Then you factor in the schedule. Most of the tough teams in the Big 12 have to travel to Stillwater. That's a nice advantage to have. But they do have to play Texas on the road November the 16th. I actually have them favored in 11 of their 12 games this year. The only one I don't is that road trip to Texas.
Do you have Oklahoma State as one of the surprise teams?
I do. I list Oklahoma State as the potential to be a dark horse national title contender. They won't be in the top 10 at the start of the year, but they could very well be contending for the national title. In fact, two of my 9 sets of power ratings actually call for them to have an unbeaten year.
Well, the Cowboys, you know, Mike Gundy, head coach, has just done an amazing job in Stillwater. What intrigued you the most about his style with this program?
Well, I love the up-temponess and the fact that they really will. They're one of the front runners in the up-tempo style, you know, coming out, throwing a football over to place. The defense has been catching up, and I just think it's a great system that he's got going. And the recruits kept getting bigger, and can't knock the facilities, not with the guys that got in charge there. So it's definitely a program on the rise.
Well, Boone Pickens has put a lot of money into that. And you talk about some of those recruits in the past. I think about that Mike Gundy, he's had some history with some terrific quarterbacks throughout his years there in Stillwater, Zach Robinson, Brandon Whedon. Provide us a little bit more insight in terms of with the quarterback position. I mean, you were just talking about Clint.
Well, you know, Clint Shelf is a guy that took over last year, sort of was in the back of the quarterback duties, but then once he was thrown into the mix, he did extremely well and, in fact, played the entire bowl game. J.W. Welsh is a guy who adds mobility to the position. He did well. He hit 67% when called upon. The two quarterbacks combined for 28 touchdowns, just 9 interceptions last year. Each one threw for over 1,500 yards. So that's an interesting QB battle, but I think for this year they might go with Chelf as the starter, using Walsh maybe as a change of pace back, someone that comes in, runs the football a little more. But as we saw last year, they had to use 3 different starting quarterbacks last year, and each one met with great success.
Okay, Phil, let's transition. Let's get to Norman, Oklahoma. Talk to me about my Sooners. Oklahoma with a 10-3 finish last season, and I think the biggest issue is, you know, it's going to be how Oklahoma will replace a graduated quarterback. Blake Bell, does he fill that slot?
Yeah, Blake Bell's a good passer. You know, last year he was brought in, and the last couple years he was brought in as a bulldozer or a belldozer, coming in to run the football. He's 6'6", 263. And a lot of folks say, well, he's just a running quarterback. But, you know, Bob Stoops does not recruit quarterbacks that can't throw the football. And Blake Bell in high school threw for 2,700 yards his senior year, completed 67% with 32 touchdowns. But you don't pull Landry Jones to bring in another quarterback to pass the football. So that's the only way he could get on the field. And I thought he did extremely well when called upon. But it's between Bell, Thomas, Trevor Knight, and Kendall Thomas, or Kendall Thompson, I should say, all battling for that quarterback spot. I do think Bell will win it. All four are quality passers, and all four have mobility, something that Oklahoma quarterbacks aren't really known for. They're still going to throw the football over the place, but I think they're also going to add a little bit of a running dimension. So whichever one wins a job, I expect outstanding passing numbers, as you always get with an Oklahoma quarterback, and then, of course, a little bit of added mobility this year as well.
Defensively has been an area of concern for the Oklahoma Sooners looking to improve. Mike Stoops in his second season after being head coach at Arizona, what, for 8 years. Are you pleased with the progress that they're making?
Yeah, I think this year's defense will be a little bit stouter. They've got a shutdown cornerback in Aaron Colvin, who's one of the best in the country. You look at him at the linebacking core, they look pretty good with Corey Nelson up there. Defensive line, a little bit of a question mark. We don't have any proven players there. They do lose a lot up front. But I like the potential replacements coming in. So overall, I think Oklahoma, while not a dominating defense, still has a chance to get up there and maybe even be in the top 20 or 25 defenses if all falls into place and they can stay healthy.
My final question for you as we get ready to head south on I-35. Talk to us about TCU, Gary Patterson's program. Each and every year, they're so competitive. What do you like the most about this team?
Well, you know, last year was an inexperienced squad for TCU. They only had 9 returning starters, and then one of them, their quarterback, Casey Pahal, was lost early in the season. So then they threw an inexperienced quarterback in for the majority of the games to go along with an inexperienced team. They did have 6 losses, which is highly unusual for a Gary Patterson's coach squad. But I like the way they played down the stretch, knocking off Texas on the road, giving Oklahoma a great game, and just losing to Michigan State in a bowl game. This year, much more experienced squad, 16 returning starters. Pahal's back at quarterback. Boykin's back at quarterback. They've got better depth at the running back spot, and they were banged up at running back last year as well. And that defense, which led the Big 12 in total defense last year, could lead them again this season because they've got the 9 starters back. So this is a dangerous TCU team this year and one that's much stronger than last year's 7-6 version.
It's going to be a lot of fun watching it all unfold in the Big 12 Conference. I know that we're both short on time. So tell all of our listeners, Phil, where they can go and get a copy of your brand-new magazine.
I appreciate that. The magazine is available right now at all the fine bookstores out there. It's at Walmart's, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walgreens, CVS, Publix, Books A Million. And all I ask is you open up a copy of the magazine compared to every other magazine on that newsstand, and you'll see 3 times the amount of information as any other magazine. You can also order it at philsteele.com. That's STEELE.com. That's about 5% order-taking site, 95% information site. And check out the team pages, the daily blog, and much more. That's philsteele.com. And finally, follow me on Twitter at philsteele042. That's at philsteele042.
Always a pleasure, Phil. Thank you so much for dropping by. And, of course, check it all out at philsteelethemagazine.com. Very good. Thank you, Phil.
Great talking to you again, Alyssa.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment. Hi, folks. Alyssa Walker-Campbell here to tell you about our good friends at Mercer Well Service, who pride themselves on integrity, leadership, and complete customer satisfaction in the oil and gas industry. They truly understand what it takes to be successful. In fact, they've been providing outstanding completion and workover rig services for over 50 years. One of the key components and reasons that they have been able to have such longevity is their exceptional staff and experienced personnel to assist you 24 hours, 7 days a week. Mercer Well Service also provides a full line of completion and workover rig services that include 158 rigs and have 25 swab units. Did you know that Mercer Well Service yard locations include Cleburne, Jacksboro, Kilgore, Whitesboro, and Sweetwater, Texas, among many others? And they are equipped with mud pumps, mud tanks, hydraulic catwalks, pipe racks, and rig supervisors. Why not give them a call today at 940-668-5147. Mercer Well Service. Call them at 940-668-5147.
The Big E Sports Show with host Alyssa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and 3-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
We are back this weekend on the Big East Sports Show, and we have a full hour of college football. We have already hit on the Big 12 Conference. It is now time to shift our focus to the Big 10 Conference. Our source on the Big 10 and its coverage, of course, each and every week is Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment. And Jason, it's great to have you back with us. I know a lot has been happening within the Big 10 all week long. It's been the Big 10 Media Day up in Chicago. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Jason, let me first and foremost, let's talk about Bo Pelini's comments up at the Big Ten Media Days. I mean, what did you think about what he had to share about the season and the upcoming year?
Well, there was nothing as good as, let's say, Charlie Weiss saying, have you seen that pile of crap out there? You can't play here. Where do you think you can play? There was nothing as entertaining as that, but a few little tidbits or topics, at least around the Nebraska's program, was the naming of four permanent captains as opposed to the way Pelini has done it in his previous 4 or 5 years, and that's having rotating captains selected 10 minutes before kickoff. That was something that was a topic, as well as, and this is kind of, I guess, the general feeling, because people, knowing the way that Bo Pelini is, I guess they were waiting for him to lose it maybe more times than not up there in front of the mic. But they say he kind of kept his composure, other than when he was asked about the SEC, and if the Big Ten has closed that gap at all. So those were two things that were talked about.
Did he address, Jason, in terms of, I know you're a defensive guy, you take a lot of pride in that, been a part of the Black Shirts. You know, Nebraska gave up a staggering 53.5 points on average in their four losses last season, and of course, including going back to the game against Wisconsin, the Big Ten championship game, giving up 70. Did he address that, and what kind of adjustments that they will make coming into the 2013 season?
Well, he was clear in letting everybody know that it wasn't the scheme. So if it's not the scheme, then I guess it's the players. But after all of those games last year, he usually would start off his meeting with the press post-game by saying, that's not on the players. We don't point the finger around here. We point the thumb, and that was on the coaches. You can't really have it both ways. He says that they're going to be multiple. They're going to be young out there. But you would think that at times when things seemed maybe too complex for a group of guys that were older, the last thing you want to do is still be just as multiple or even more multiple. He's talking more about being a three-man front. What that says to me is that we don't really have the horses up front, and we're better at linebacker than we are at defensive line. And let's be honest, I mean, it's easier for coaches to go out and find a kid that's 6'2", 6'3", 225, 235 pounds than it is to go out and find a guy who's 6'3", 300 that can run. I mean, defensive tackle, I think most coaches will tell you, is the most difficult position for them to recruit. There's just not an abundance of those big guys out there, especially in high school. Most defensive linemen project 3-4 years down the road just because they've got to change their bodies. They've got to find that right mentality. There's so many things that go into developing those big guys down in the middle, and Nebraska just hasn't had any since Ndamukong Suh, and they didn't really reap the benefits from having Ndamukong Suh. Usually there's an influx of players at that position when you have an All-American go through there. They not only didn't get any that looked like Ndamukong and played like Ndamukong, but they got guys that looked the opposite. He went after a guy that was more, you know, or guys that were 6 feet tall and weren't more of those athletic types, but more of just kind of those guys you could just stick in there and they'll clog up the middle. Well, they haven't been able to clog up anything. Half of them have left, or half of them are on in the training room night and day. They just haven't gotten anything as of yet. They recruited, they signed a bunch of guys 2 years ago, so a lot of those kids are now coming out of their redshirt year, so we'll kind of see what they're able to do with those guys. But yeah, I can understand why he'd want to maybe go with more of a three-man front, just because they did sign and have signed a lot of linebackers since he's been here, and they feel like they have some guys that can play. But, you know, with young players comes a lot of mistakes, and usually it's the mental aspect of things, which is why it would be odd for him to say, we're still going to be very multiple in the things that we do.
We are getting you ready for the start of the college football season. We are zeroing in right now on the Big Ten Conference. Of course, Jason was just talking about that Nebraska, it's lost many of its defensive starters from last season. They've signed some new guys. They've got some, junior college transfer, Randy Gregory, linebacker Thomas Brown. I mean, what do you know a whole lot about these guys and what kind of contributions they look to make, and hopefully they'll be immediate?
Well, the Gregory kid, it's kind of funny because they talk about this kid like he's going to walk out there and he's going to win the Buckus Award or the Lombardi. My feeling on junior college kids is there's a reason why they're there. And chances are, I think when you play the odds, that most of them will end up not contributing anything, let alone becoming stars. Now, there's always diamonds in the rough, absolutely, but I think whether it's academics, whether it's they hadn't developed as of yet coming out of high school, there's usually some kind of flaw there. And let's face it, when you get to college, the workload, the course load, what they're asking you to do both athletically and academically only gets more difficult.
Absolutely.
So you better be able to provide some sort of academic support. And Nebraska can do that. But it also, a lot of that weight lies on the shoulders of the kids. And if they're not willing to do it in high school, what makes you think they're going to want to do it in college? Some kids just think they're going to be able to come and play football, and that's it. Well, that's not the case. And this Gregory kid, he's not even here yet. But when you hear coaches talk about him like, he's going to have a big impact and this and that, to me, you just cannot say that. You just don't know. You can't take junior college film and say that definitely translates to big-time Division I football. You just never know how a kid is going to adjust, whether he's coming from high school or coming from junior college. So, for a staff to be kind of, counting on a guy that much when he hasn't even stepped foot on campus yet. He's not here. He's not learning the defense. He's not working out with the team. I mean, I don't know whether it's the coach's fault or, do you blame the kid for not being here? I mean, obviously there must be a reason why he's not here, which then goes towards that whole, here he is, a junior college kid. Is he still trying to get eligible? Has he not signed the paperwork? I mean, what's the deal here? Why isn't he here yet?
You're listening to the voice of Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment. We are talking about the Big Ten Conference. Of course, his Nebraska Cornhuskers last year 10-4. Bo Pelini entering into his sixth season. And, the Huskers, I would say, for the most part, they're coming off a solid 2012. They've underachieved according to your standards, Jason. You've been a part of the famed black shirts. You take so much pride. You won three national titles. You've been a part of this. How difficult is it as a former player, one of the all-time greatest that have ever been a part of this program, to see the defense struggling so much? And, when you talk about Nebraska this year going into 2013, you think of things offensively and what Taylor Martinez is going to be able to do, but that's got to be really a sore spot for you, knowing that defensively you guys are not up to par, you're not up to standard.
Oh, it's been embarrassing. And I think I speak for all of the former black shirts, is that we didn't expect this, especially with Bo Pelini as coach. You know, that was one of the reasons, I think, why he was hired, was because the defense struggled so badly under Bill Callahan, and Kevin Cosgrove was the defense coordinator at the time. And Bo came in, and it seemed like there was a quick fix there. And I think a lot of it had to do with players that he inherited. That was one thing that Bill Callahan could do, was recruit. So there were kids here on campus, but Bo has not been able to produce or develop players that he needs to run his system. You know, which is then concerning when you hear him say those things about the defense and what they're going to run, because the part, I think, that he needs to focus on is the development of players. Because I don't care what system you run. You could have the greatest system in the world. If the kids don't understand it and the kids can't go out and execute it, it doesn't matter. It won't be successful. And I think that's the part where he's got to say, you know, maybe it is the scheme. Instead of saying it's not the scheme's fault, it is the scheme's fault, and it's the coach's fault if you don't recognize that the kids can't run that scheme. The best coaches take the players that they have and realize what they do very well and what they do poorly. And they try to hide the things that they do poorly while magnifying the things that they do well. And he has not found that balance yet. He hasn't found, or I don't even know if they're searching for that. It's like, this is what I'm running. You learn it or you get out of here. And I'm not going to kind of help you. I just want you to know it. And I just want you to learn it. And on game day, you better be ready. And that just does not fly. It doesn't fly. And you know, it's with these young kids, I think a lot is being put on their shoulders right away because they're all asked to have success right now. And if they don't have success right now, then you're looked at as a failure. And that's part of, you know, the day and age that we live in with social media, and everybody's a coach and everybody's tweeting out their opinions and you know, Facebook and everything else. And it's got to be difficult. I sympathize with these kids for that, having to be in that environment, but they also encourage that environment too. I mean, they're also there tweeting out every little thing that they do and you know, the connection that they have. And people, yeah, you know, they always say, oh, you know, if you were playing in this day and age, you know, you'd be the same way. And I honestly say, no, we wouldn't. We didn't want anybody knowing anything that we did. You know, just the rare time when, you know, we'd have to meet with the media on Tuesday or Wednesday, it was like, okay, we'll give you what you want, but we know exactly where we're cutting the line, and we're not going to get into certain stuff. And we just didn't. But now, these kids offer that stuff up, you know, and maybe it's just the way that they're kind of brought up in society. I don't know exactly. But, you know, I know I kind of got off track here, but Pelini's got a lot of work basically to do this year, and the defense has been obviously a sore spot for a lot of us former players, but the offense, you know, hasn't been great either. I mean, there are times when they move the ball and they look great, but if you get down to the 1 yard line after going 99 yards and you fumble the ball, it's all for nothing. So it doesn't matter. You know, there are a lot of things that the offense could work on, and I think, you know, they have the players. I would just like them to keep their mouth shut, a few in particular, like the quarterback, because, you know, at media days he's talking about how this is going to be one of the greatest offensive lines that Nebraska's ever had. And I'm thinking, man, do you not know the history of this school? Because that, if anything, is the position that Nebraska is known for, is the offensive line, always producing these big behemoths, that offensive line that just, you know, used to mash people. And I'm thinking, you have one kid that made a second-team All-American team last year returning, and you're telling me that this is going to be one of the best in America? I mean, there were times you'd have two, three guys that were first-team All-Americans returning as seniors at this school. I mean, sometimes I just don't know if they understand or they appreciate some of the history of the school. And I think when you know kind of the guys that came before you and you appreciate and you respect what they did, I think, you know, it has an impact on you yourself when you're a player. At least I know it did for us.
I agree. Jason Peter with us a few more moments this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. We got some big, big news, exciting things happening right here at the Big E Sports Show. Of course, each and every week, Jason Peter is with us. Check out his website at jasonpeter.com. And Jason, you brought up a number of interesting points where we are running out of time, but you were talking about the development of players and also about Taylor Martinez. So what is your assessment as far as how he has continued to develop during his time at Nebraska? I mean, I know that we've talked about in the past that, you know, perhaps he's more of a threat with his feet than his arm. I guess the real question is, this season, will he be able to hold on to the ball?
Yeah, well, I know that Adidas, who reps Nebraska, was working on constructing a football specifically for Taylor because he doesn't like the way that the new game footballs feel. He likes the old, worn-out, beat-up football that has no grip on it, you know, that they use during the week in practice. He likes those on game day. And maybe that is a connection to why the ball ends up on the ground so many times on game day, is because it's got no grip on it. But, yeah, I mean, this is going to be a obviously a big year for Taylor, his senior year. He's worked hard. I'll give him that, you know, but he opens himself up for a lot of criticism with some of the things that he says, and you know, you just hope for his sake that they're able to kind of fix some of those problems. Otherwise, it's going to be a long senior year.
You know, it really is amazing, too, Jason, whether it is Taylor Martinez at Nebraska or Johnny Manziel, you would just think at this day and time in college football programs or any program, that, you know, they would really rein in their athletes a little bit more and try to, you know, have more control in terms of what's going out there, what kind of things that they're saying or not saying. It's unreal.
They let some of the, you know, if it keeps happening, I've said it before, if it keeps happening, it's because you're letting it happen. So it's because Kevin Sumlin lets it, you know, it's because Bo Pelini lets it. Otherwise, you put your foot down, you go in, you go on a one-on-one meeting with these kids, and you say, if something happens again, you're going to have, you know, me to deal with. And possibly you could be walking out the door here for the very last time. And I guarantee it doesn't happen again.
Absolutely. Okay, my final question for you, Jason, is, as we are running out of time, talk about the Cornhuskers schedule. I find it to be a bit soft. Would you agree?
The whole Big Ten schedule is soft.
Easy.
Yeah, the conference isn't great either. And you have UCLA, which we get here at home.
Yeah, but you all open up with what, Wyoming?
Wyoming, I believe.
Wyoming, Southern Miss, UCLA on the 14th. That's the weekend of the big golf tournament. We look forward to that.
Yeah, that's, you know, I think the big event, at least on the weekend of the 14th. But no, that's UCLA will be in town. But yeah, none of the Big Ten schools have great schedules. I know that they're working on eliminating some of those non-BCS-type schools from the schedule. That will be a good thing, but Nebraska's schedule actually in the years to come only gets worse, if you can believe it. I mean, that's how bad some of the scheduling was that was done 5 and 6 years ago under Steve Peterson.
Well, Jason, you shared some great stuff, and I know that we'd promised the listeners we were going to get into and delve into some of the other teams within the Big Ten Conference, but we promise that we will do that over the next couple of weeks. So, Jason, we'll just talk to you here real soon, okay?
Yeah, we're only a stone's throw away from being right in the mix of it, so I'm excited.
I know. It is an exciting time of year as we look forward to the start of the 2013 college football season. We're going to step aside much, much more straight ahead here in just a moment.